Conference record has joined the conference.
Okay, good. So we're now recording. It's only just the top of the hour, so I'm going to wait two or three more minutes.
Okay.
Then we will do a quick roll call of the EC members, just so that you guys will have a chance of recognizing their voices, know who is on. I'm not going to ask the public to identify themselves by phone, but I will ask everyone who is attending this meeting to send mail to me, patrick@jcp.org, to let me know who you are and what your affiliation is, just for the record, and that way I can, that way we'll know who showed up. Okay, we're going to wait a couple more minutes. In the meantime, if there are people on the phone call who are not logged into WebEx, please do, particularly if you are not an EC member, because otherwise you won't have the materials. Whoever's typing, I can hear you. Starfix will mute you. Gonna wait one more minute. Everybody, please mute. Star 6. Don't want other people to hear your private business as you talk to your buddy. Get that. Heather, do you happen to know what the magic code is that I can use to mute everybody?
I think you have to dial 0 for the operator.
No, there's a code for it. I don't want to bring an operator in. Okay, never mind. We'll just have to rely on people. That's something I should know how to do. Okay, we're at 3 minutes past 8 Pacific time. Welcome everyone to the first public EC teleconference. I'm hearing an echo. Everybody, please mute star 6. Thank you. Okay, we'll start with a roll call of EC members. Okay, Stefano, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Applix, anyone from Applix? No. Arm?
Paul Manfrini's here.
Paul, okay. Oh, yes, sorry, let me just ask each of you to respond with your name so that our guests will know who is present. AT&T? No AT&T. Cable Labs?
John Courtney is here.
Hey, John. Deutsche Telekom?
Yes, Vladimir Ventek here.
Vladimir Ventek, hi. IBM?
Mark Rogalski.
Okay. Werner Kyle?
Yes.
Nokia? Nokia is not present. Oracle? Roger, are you there? Roger was at the first half of the meeting. Heather, could you drop Roger Riggs a note and an email asking to join us? RIM. Anyone from RIM? Nope. Samsung? Nope. Siemens?
Yes, Margaret Hunt.
Yeah.
And Christoph Kuhmünch.
Oh, Christoph. Yes. Okay, hi.
And Marquardt as well. Marquardt,
yes,
as well.
Thank you. SK Telecom? No. TOTUS?
David Brito.
Hi, David. And Vodafone are excused. They have a site-wide meeting, unable to attend. Okay. Azul.
Gil Tenner here.
Oh, hi, Gil. Were you at the
first
half? Missed the first half.
What is that?
You missed the first half of the meeting.
No, I was, I guess.
Oh, well, I called your name multiple times. Okay, never mind. Credit Suisse.
Victor Grazi.
Victor Grazi and Suzanne Revita.
Revita.
Okay, Eclipse.
Wayne Beaton is here.
Okay. Ericsson.
Magnus Lonroth is here.
Fujitsu.
Mike Nicola.
Goldman Sachs.
Scott Baudry.
Okay. Google.
Josh Block.
Josh. HP.
Scott Jameson.
Hi. IBM.
Steve Wolf.
Hi. Intel. Okay. Run the Java community.
Martin.
Hi, Martin. Oracle.
Anish Karmarkar is here.
Hi. Red Hat.
Scott Stark.
Scott, hi. SAP.
Steve Winsler.
Steve, hi. So Java.
Bruno Sose is here.
Bruno. And Twitter. Twitter. Chris was here for the first part. Okay.
Patrick, it's star 5 to mute all the lines.
Thank you. And same to unmute?
Yes.
I guess people can individually unmute themselves. I don't know if they...
No. We mute everybody. If you want to make everybody silent with too much noise,
okay.
It's star 5.
Okay. Thank you for letting me know. All right. We'll see. I'll try and do without that because otherwise people won't be able to jump in with questions. Okay. So those of you who can see the screen here. Yes.
Patrick, this is Bruno. I know sometimes people, especially people that are new to the call, problems in asking questions by voice. So we are monitoring the chats on the WebEx.
Oh, good.
If anyone wants to ask any questions on the chats, we can release directly on the call.
Excellent. Thank you. That's a good idea. That's very helpful. Thanks. Okay. Let me just explain briefly this color coding you'll see here on the roll call. If someone is marked as green, that means they will regain voting privileges if they attend this meeting. We have rules now that if you miss 2 meetings in a row, you lose the right to vote. AT&T did not show up, so they have not regained their voting rights. RIM did not show up, so they have just lost their voting rights. SK Telecom and Samsung, no change, they have no voting rights. Google is here, so they're out of danger again, and Twitter at least was here for the first half, so they are okay too. All right.
Patrick, Mikey,
yes.
Nicola, I have
yes.
a question. These are two separate calls now. Are these two separate meetings, or is it all one? Is it just considered one meeting, you know, if you're attending or half of it?
That's a good question, and we didn't consider that. I guess I'm inclined to treat it as a single meeting.
Yeah, I would think so. I would favor that.
Yeah, okay. So basically, if anyone attends either half, that's sufficient. Okay, so quick agenda review, a little background why we're doing this, a quick update on the JCP.next stuff, 355 and 358. I want to talk about the annual awards, talk about Java 1, and then kind of open things up for discussion to see what you guys think, whether there's other things that we can do like this to improve the communications between the EC and you guys, and then we'll do a kind of open-ended Q&A. I'll make this as fast as I can so we can get to the meat of it. Why we're doing this, JSR 348, which implemented version 2.8 of the process, required us to do a bunch of things in the area of transparency. There's a lot of transparency stuff, as you know, around working groups, but we also wanted to put some requirements on ourselves. So we said we would do two public teleconferences a year and one public face-to-face meeting at Java 1. We think this is a good idea anyway, so even without being required to do it, we would have done it. And as I've said here, we do have this, we will be holding a public face-to-face at Java 1. I'll give you details of that later. And we also have a java.net project and a public mailing list and an issue tracker. You can see the URL here. Very little use being made of that right now. We can kind of talk a little more later when we talk about communication mechanisms to see whether this is something that people want to use. But it's certainly available there. There is a public mailing list, and you can sign up for it. I encourage you to do so. Okay. JSR 355, the EC merge. I forgot to update my slides early this morning. The review ballot closed yesterday. The results were, I can pull it up. Just a second. I will need to share my browser. So, okay, now I can get the stupid toolbar thing out of the way. Go to JCP and 355, and the ballot, as you guys will see, finished yesterday. You can click through and see the results. So pretty overwhelming. We had a couple of folks didn't vote. We had one abstention, Google. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 members who at the time of the ballot were ineligible to vote due to having missed meetings, but just about everybody else voted yes. So back to here. We are moving ahead with this. It's pretty simple. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but basically what we plan to do is to merge the two ECs and eliminate two duplicate seats. That is, Oracle currently has two seats and IBM has two seats. We'll eliminate the duplicates. We'll leave 30 members then in the merged EC, and we'll do that immediately after the election this year. Next year, October 2013, we will eliminate 5 more seats, reducing to 25, and everybody we'll have to run again. So it's kind of like musical chairs. So we'll have 30 members running for 25 seats. So next year's election should be pretty interesting. Stay tuned. we'll get this JSR finished up pretty soon. I plan to do a proposed final draft in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks or so. And I expect by the end of July we should have everything. The ballot should start. So we should be done well in advance of the election. If you want to see the details, you can visit the java.net project. You'll see the URL here. You can see there, I think I have a copy of a presentation that gives more details about exactly what we're doing, and you can download the revised versions of the process document and the standing rules or the current drafts of them to see exactly what we're planning to do. But that's pretty simple and straightforward. Let's talk now, and I'm going to go through this pretty quickly because I want to leave time for questions and comments, but jcp.next.3 or JSR 358. Let me just pull up the presentation. jcp.next.3 public. Okay. Right. Hope you guys can still see this. So we're talking here about a process of constitutional change. In other words, how we change the documents that define how the organization does its work. There are two documents that matter, the JSBA, which is the legal agreement that people sign when they join the JCP, and the process document, which is the document that defines how we do our day-to-day work. There's also a third document, the standing rules, which I've also briefly mentioned, which governs how the meetings are held. But the two primary documents are the process document and the JSBA. So I'm going to give you a quick background, let you know where we are with this JSR, and then I'm going to very quickly run through a whole shopping list of items that we are discussing, considering for inclusion in this JSR, considering having changes made to either the JSBA or in each of these areas. We're right at the beginning of this process, although we have kind of spent a few months working on bringing up this shopping list, but we'll actually get down to work in a couple of weeks. Quick background, as you probably know, we plan 3 JSRs to improve our processes and to kind of meet your expectations. JCP.next.1 we finished last year. That was JSR 348. We did simple low-hanging fruit there, mostly around transparency and participation. Anything that was complicated, anything that was legalistic, anything to do with licensing, or that would require us to change the JSBA, we deliberately postponed to JCP.next.3 in order to allow us to get something done quickly. And we finished JSR 348 in about 6 months. It went pretty well. 355 I've just discussed. It's in progress now. That will merge the two ECs. 358 is the third JSR, JCP.next.3. This will modify the JSBA as well as the process document. And it's worth pointing out that anyone who wishes to participate in ongoing JCP work will be required to sign the new JSBA, because all future JSRs will be governed by the new version of the JSBA, and we will, in fact, encourage existing JSRs to adopt its requirements voluntarily if that is legally possible. We'll have to see. Okay. Filed it recently. JSR review ballot begins today. Runs for 2 weeks. We have a Java.NET project. It's up and running. There's an observer mailing list. There's a public forum. There's a public issue tracker. And there's a document archive. And you can see the URL here. If you guys have not yet joined up, I encourage you to do so. I should have said, it may be obvious, it's obvious to us, but not necessarily to you, but the way we run these JSRs is that I act as the spec lead and the executive committee members form the expert group. But otherwise it's run as a regular JSR, except, of course, we don't produce a TCK or an RI. We produce documents which are one or both of the process document, the JSBA. Okay, we're going to hold an expert group meeting in the week of July 10th after the ballot. And as I've said, we've got a long shopping list of items for consideration, which I'm now going to run through. Okay, the first one is around independent implementations and field of use, the JSBA. We have this term independent implementation. It's a formally defined term, and it means any implementation of a Java application that is not derived directly from source code. So it's done independently in, as it were, a clean room mode. You basically have the right to license the spec, and that gives you the right to create an independent implementation. As you all probably know, there is language in the Java SE 7 and the Java SE 8 TCK license that restricts the field of use in which implementations can be put. It restricts them basically to general purpose desktop and laptop systems. I forget the exact language. Many people believe that this restricts the right to create independent implementations. And obviously this was a problem for Apache, who were unwilling to accept those terms. So EC members and many others have requested that we clarify the language around this in the next version of the JSBA. I think it's probably reasonable to say that many, if not the majority of people, would prefer that field of use clauses be explicitly prohibited. But people have said if they are going to be permitted, then everybody should be permitted to use them, not just Oracle. Oracle has said, sure, we will look at this and we're willing to clarify the language, but we believe that that we wish to continue to apply field of use clauses to the SE platform JSR. So that's the first item, one of the biggest. The first three are really the biggest items. Everything else is simple in comparison. Second item is around compatibility. You probably all know that starting with Sun and Oracle consistently insisted on strong compatibility requirements to the extent possible to ensure that all implementations are compatible. Others have argued that it's okay to do an incompatible implementation so long as you don't use the Java name.
There Excuse me. This is revisionist. Sun's president did say it was okay to do an incompatible implementation so long as he didn't call it Java.
Everybody else who spoke for Sun and who spoke for Oracle has said something different. That's why I've said others argue. Yes, others include.
Well, I think Oracle is incorrectly speaking for Sun here. That's all I'd like to.
Take your point. I suspect you would have something to say on this subject. What we want to do in JSR 348, assuming you're willing to participate, Josh, although, well, we'll see, is to ensure that the JSPA does define a clear policy on compatibility and to make sure that any recommended or required licenses which we promote don't contradict that. The question, I guess, to be one of the questions to be raised, and I'm hearing somebody speaking in the background, please mute your phone, star 6, whether we should continue to insist that compatibility is, I'm hearing a computer, please mute, star 6, otherwise I'll have to mute everybody and then people won't be able to jump in with comments. Sun and Oracle's compatibility policy has always been that compatibility is a binary function, that implementation should be compatible at all times and under all circumstances. The question as to whether we should relax that. That's the second item. On licensing and open source, the JSPA states that spec leads are free to choose the license terms for each of the three deliverables, the spec, RI, and TCK. But we do have a review process whereby Oracle Legal reviews what people propose. This review process is time-consuming, occasionally contentious, and the fact that we have multiple licenses, that different JSRs may be released under different licenses, can make things difficult for licensees. So we all agree that we should be more consistent. Maybe we should have standardized licenses. That would be a good thing. We want to make sure that we have a clear policy about open source projects and to make sure that the language in the JSPA is consistent with that policy. Moving ahead, Sun and Oracle have consistently insisted, we had a correction to this wording in a meeting recently, have always insisted that the spec license impose strict compatibility requirements. So therefore, whenever people occasionally have said, we'd like to use an Apache license or another liberal license for the spec, Oracle has always said, no, that's unacceptable because we need the compatibility requirements inserted into the spec license. There is a standard license that almost every JSR uses. Oracle themselves don't use Apache or BSD for RIs and TCKs, but have no concerns about other people doing so. We have agreement that this legal review process needs to be properly documented. Currently, it is not. And when we tackle licensing and open source, we've agreed we want to start from first principles. We want to consider what we want licensing terms to achieve. So at a minimum, for example, full disclosure up front. We want to make sure that the license that is disclosed in the beginning is available to everyone, and then once it is offered, it's not kind of withdrawn. So we don't want any bait and switch. Of course, it's always okay for additional licenses to be offered, so long as the public one is available to everyone. And we want to make sure that if you take a license, that you can have some reliance that it will continue to be renewed so that you can build your products on it without having it taken away on very short notice. Okay, those were the three biggies. Those are going to take a considerable amount of our time and energy. From here on out, it gets somewhat simpler. around transparency, we were not able in JSR 348 to make any changes to the JSPA. So we want to take a look at the JSPA and make sure that there's nothing in there that contradicts or makes it difficult to implement the transparency requirements that JSR 348 introduced. We also want to look at any licenses that are recommending that people use and make sure that those don't conflict. For example, you know, if there's confidentiality language in a license, then that would contradict with the transparency stuff. So we need to clean all that stuff up. Because JSR 348 enables non-JCP members to contribute to the work of expert groups by commenting on public mailing lists, we want to make sure that we have appropriate terms of use in place so that appropriate IP grants are made when people who may not have signed the JSPA participate. More on that later. There was an item left over from JSR 306, which was a previous attempt to do a major revision of the JSPA. That was ultimately abandoned. There's an item in there that would permit non-Java implementations of specs under certain conditions. When we did an internal legal review here, Oracle Legal has said this touches too closely on current litigation, and please postpone discussion on this. So that's what we're going to do. Again, on the legal front, there is language from 306. We had some language suggesting changes to the way that patent grants were made. Rather than explicitly granting a patent, the language would basically have members say, I promise not to assert patent rights. We want to consider whether we wish to make that change. There's a whole section in the JSPA which also addresses patent grants for JSRs that you don't participate in. We have some concerns about that, about whether it is reasonable, whether it's an obstacle to certain people joining, and whether it's even enforceable. So we want to re-examine that question too. Role of individuals is a little confusing. We do, as you all know, permit individuals to join the JCP. We have this weird thing with an Exhibit B, which we require them to get their employer to sign this document saying that if the employer is claiming any IP rights over what may be in their heads, the employer releases it so that they can make that appropriate grant. There's a lot of problems with this. People change employers. Doesn't quite sync up with that Section 6 patent grant that I mentioned a moment ago. We do occasionally see commercial organizations gaming the system by having their employers join as individuals. The whole relationship between an employer and employee is not really addressed, and then we get into even more confusing situations where we have people joining as quote-unquote representatives but not as agents of non-commercial organizations such as Java user groups. So there's a big mess here. All the lawyers agree that something's got to be done to clean it up, and we are going to do our best to do so. With regard to fees, the fees are defined in the JSPA, which is a bit odd. We want to move them out into the process document so that we don't have to go through a major legal effort if we wish to make a small tweak to the fees. We're not proposing anything significant, but we may propose a lower rate for small commercial organizations, startups, and so on, and we may lower or eliminate fees for nonprofit organizations, which we already don't charge Java user groups, so this would only apply to universities and so on. So probably some small tweaks to the fees, nothing major. This next one is a bit complicated. We use the term RI to really mean two different things. I'm putting my conformance testing hat on now. With that hat on, an RI is considered to be a proof of concept implementation that implementers can use when they are compatibility testing their implementation. They can use it to disambiguate the spec if the spec is a bit fuzzy. If they see a difference in behavior between their implementation, they can go back and check the RI and say, maybe this is what was intended. So that's one meaning of RI. Then the second one is the form in which the spec lead is obliged to license its implementation, either in source or binary form, for the creation of derivative works. I think it would be helpful if we teased apart those two definitions and try to clarify the two different meanings. We also want to mandate that a binary RI must be released. Believe it or not, there's no requirement at the moment that you do that, even though the former meaning, the proof of concept implementation, means nothing unless you have a binary RI. So there's cleanup work to be done here too. Possible governance changes. We've had talk of an architecture council, which would be a more technical body than the executive committee, which is more legalistic and process-oriented. Not sure how much support there is for this, but it's at least on the table. Certain number of changes considered around TCK and TCK quality. We've tried in the past to mandate TCK quality with certain requirements in the process document. In theory, EC members are supposed to review TCKs for quality, but certainly I've been on the receiving end of third-party TCKs when I ran the Java SE TCK team, and I saw some pretty poor quality ones. So there's work that we can do to try and strengthen this. We want to take a look at TCK licenses to make sure that they don't inhibit the development of TCK tests and compatibility tests by implementers. And we want to make sure that there is no, as I said earlier, contradiction between these licenses and any transparency requirements that 348 introduced. I'm almost there. Current version of the JSPA says the expert group should dissolve at final release. Nobody really understands this exactly why we did that. It's buried in the mist of time, but we think it's because we didn't fully specify what happens and how IP rights flow during maintenance. We want to take another look at that and see if we can enable the expert group to continue over multiple releases. Slightly related to this, we want to address whether and under what circumstances it's possible for people to withdraw their IP that they previously granted. There's nothing that says JS recognizes that JS does reach a natural end of life. Software just, you know, there comes a point where people say this is not relevant anymore. Yet the JSBA language, if you read it strictly, says once a spec lead, always a spec lead, you're obliged to continue to deliver the spec RI and TCK forever. So we want to clean that up. We had an episode a few years ago with a member company, Kizda, went bankrupt. They were spec lead for a bunch of JSRs. It caused an enormous amount of confusion. So we want to look at the possibility of some kind of escrow process to see whether we could do something to address, make it easier to kind of start and resurrect JSRs if the spec lead should abandon them or should become bankrupt or whatever. Okay, this will be an interest to you guys. The JSBA is a complicated document, and most individuals, non-corporate members, and many corporate members too, complain that it's intimidating. Certainly individuals find having to sign the JSBA a significant barrier, and some people are just unwilling to do so. They kind of say, I shouldn't have to get a lawyer in order to sign this. We want to refactor it. I say here to two documents, but based on something I mentioned earlier about terms of use for casual participation, let's consider there are three levels of participation. There is casual participation by hanging around, for example, a Java.NET project, being on a mailing list, throwing in the occasional comment, logging an issue. You ought not to have to sign a big, scary legal document in order to do that. You need some simple click-through terms of use, such as we have on Java.NET. So we're proposing that we create a standard set of field of terms of use that would be suitable for this kind of participation, and then we would mandate that all JSRs would provide that and use those terms of use for their people who want to casually participate. They would be able then to do that without signing the JSBA at all. Then we would need a JSBA, but we want to split it into two. We want to create a simpler version of it that, let me start the other way around. The complicated version will spell out all the IP obligations of the spec lead. That's where the bulk of the scary legal stuff is, because it's all about IP grants and your obligations of a spec lead. If you don't want to be a spec lead, but you simply want to join an expert group, you should be able to sign a simpler document. So So the goal is to basically to split it into two, a simple version for just expert group members and a more complicated one for SLEC leads. We have a complication with the sections, which I mentioned earlier, which unless I can eliminate that, unfortunately, the simple version of this document will not be that simple. So work to do there, too. Finally, we want to see whether there's anything we can do to make it easier for the JCP to collaborate with other standards developing organizations. We have a test case at the moment with ITU, International Telegraphic Union, or Telecommunications Union, I forget what the term is, who want to normatively reference some of our GSR specs. I'm working through that at the moment. Okay. Finally, a little bit of cleanup. And, yep, cleanup work, just clean up the language and so on. And then from an implementation perspective, we need to consider how we phase it in. All new GSRs must adopt it. We will probably try to encourage other GSRs to adopt it voluntarily, if that makes sense. We will have to specify whether the new version of the process document, when that will apply, and so on and so on. But those are implementation details. So, what next? Or how do we go from here? This is a big, scary bunch of work, as you can see. It touches on licensing and IP flow and compatibility and, to be frank, all of the stuff that has been and is being addressed in court. It's not going to be easy to work our way through all of that stuff. We are talking legal stuff, and therefore, at least in the case of the corporate members of the EC, they are going to want their own lawyers to be involved at some stage. And as you probably know, once you get a bunch of lawyers in a room or in a virtual room having a discussion, things can very quickly get very complicated. So it's going to take us a considerable amount of time to work our way through this process. But as I think you can see, you know, we're not running away from the big scary problems. I'm not promising we're going to be able to solve them, but just about everything is on the table for discussion. So I should probably stop at this point. I don't know whether I should stop here and ask for questions and comments and feedback now. We can do that for a few minutes, perhaps. Anybody have any immediate comments on this or questions? Not hearing anything right now. Okay. Let me go back to the agenda slides. Okay, so we covered this topic. A bit of an abrupt switch, but I can finish this up fairly quickly, and then I want to stop talking. I'm losing my voice, and I want you guys to have a chance to jump in. So annual awards. We do yearly award ceremony at our Java One party, at a party at Java One. We are opening up the nomination process now to the public. I don't think we've ever done that. Maybe we did that last year, but anyway, there is a webpage here, and if you wish to nominate someone for one of these three awards, member or participant of the year, outstanding spec lead, and most significant JSR, you don't have to nominate for all three. You can nominate as many times as you wish. So go to this URL, submit your nominations, then we will gather them and collect them, and the EC will vote on them sometime in mid-July. We need to get this wrapped up relatively quickly because we have to go off and get the awards engraved. But anyway, encourage your participation here. This is your chance to give a shout out to people in the organization who you think are doing good work. Okay, following on from that, quick report on Java One. We've got a number of sessions. I'm going to be doing a report on, they're all being done as BOFs. That's basically the way it works because we don't fit into the kind of technical tracks. I'm hoping that these aren't going to conflict with each other. All the BOFs are going to be on Monday and Tuesday evenings. So we're keeping our fingers crossed they don't schedule us against each other. So I'll be talking about JCP next and giving an update on how we're getting on. We have a kind of general discussion on developer participation. We have a meet the candidates meeting. We did that last year, and that I think was a good innovation, another of our transparency initiatives. So since the elections will be coming up shortly after this, anyone who is running in the elections, we will kind of introduce them to you, and you'll be able to question them directly. And I think the fourth of these is kind of a joint thing with Bruno and Ben and Martin from London Java Community, but we'll be talking about the Adopted JSR and the Adopt Open JDK programs. Then as for other events, we'll be doing a face-to-face EC meeting on the Sunday. That's the first day. That'll be at 2 o'clock, and the, what do they call them, the keynotes start at 4. So we'll be doing our face-to-face meeting for an hour at 2 o'clock. We have an expert group meeting room that people can use Monday through Wednesday, and the big grassroots party on Tuesday, where we will do the awards. So those are our Java 1 plans. More on that later as we get closer to the event. Okay, that's all I had for formal stuff. So now we can kind of open it up. Let me just say, so the next place, we've got the face-to-face meeting. Here's the date. That's at Java 1. We'll be doing a second open teleconference in November. We do our winter meetings in the afternoon Pacific time, summer meetings in the morning. This is to enable participation by folks in the Far East. So that will be 3 p.m. Pacific time. Europe, but hopefully will suit at least some people. We can basically now go into Q&A. One of the topics I want to address, if you guys have any feedback for us, is the whole business of these open meetings and public mailing lists and so on, whether there's other things that we could be doing that you would like us to do. But mostly I just want to hear from you. Obviously, if you've got any feedback or questions about the JCP.next stuff, go for it. I'm going to stop talking now and hope that some of our guests have comments or questions or whatever. Over to you guys.
Hi, Patrick. It's Martin here from London. Just one quick thing on improving, I guess, the visibility of the JCP and the work we do. I believe Java.net as an infrastructure has some fairly significant issues around SEO and having search engines such as Google actually be able to find it. So perhaps some feedback needs to go back into the Project Kenai people or the people who run the Java.net infrastructure to see if they can improve that.
Yeah, good point. I haven't actually tried searching. But it wouldn't surprise me. That's probably a suitable topic to perhaps bring up at either the Java Champions or the Jug calls. But I will certainly pass it back to Sonia and see what response I can get. I did see a note that they're hiring a couple of people. Now, these are replacement people. They're not incremental headcounts. We'll put them up to full strength once they get those hires in. So hopefully that will help a little bit. They know how much work they have to do. But anyway, thanks for the feedback. Okay, anybody else? I don't see.
Hello, Patrick.
Yes.
Hi, this is Richard from the London Java community. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Fantastic. One of the things I was going to comment on, especially since you brought up potential changes to the JSPA, a lot of our members are working for companies that haven't got corporate JCP sign-off. So for them, in order to get personal JSPA sign-offs, they need to go through, you know, a couple of layers of management and talking through their internal corporate bureaucracy. And they also potentially need to do this with an OCA as well. So for them, there would be a significant practical benefit in trying to merge the two agreements or in any way make it so they could get one sign-off for just minimize the amount of internal bureaucracy they need to fight in order to get themselves approved for doing out-of-work stuff on both OpenJDK and on JSRs?
Yep, got it. Yes, that's interestingly, that was something that was brought up in the first half of this meeting, the private EC meeting just a little while ago. I can tell you that we haven't gone into this in detail, but our initial very exploratory thinking on this is if we could abolish the Exhibit B altogether, that would be good. We're not sure that it's actually practically of very much value. Obviously, if you join, you are going to have to assert that you have the right to make whatever IP grants you are going to make, but it should be sufficient, we think, to ask the individual to assert that rather than to require them to run around and get a signed thing from their employer. But we're at the early stages of this. I am well aware of the fact that this is a problem, which is why I, you know, expressed it in those terms, and we're going to do everything we can to simplify the process. But thanks for the comment. Okay, any other questions? This is your chance, guys. We only do this twice a year, so jump in.
Patrick, here on the chat, Scott talked about, on the compatibility discussion, that one, the second item is unfairly to open source license. I'm not sure if I'm going to comment something about that.
I'm not even sure what he means by the second item, but let me go back to the, I presume, the let me go back and find it. X top 3.
And can you elaborate a little more of what you mean by unfair?
I'm sorry? What's the
question? I think you said it's unfair to open source licenses. Could you,
yeah, I mean,
could you elaborate?
I'm not sure. Scott, will you please make your point? Yes. First of all, which slide are we talking about?
Okay, so what he says here in the chat, Scott, do you want to say or let me read it?
First of all, which slide are we talking about? Scott, are you there? I guess not.
Okay, so basically what he said in the chat is the second item, I think is on the compatibility slide. The second item seems to unfairly target open source license as not being able to promote compatibility. The TCK is the sole determinant of whether an implementation is compatible.
Right. Well, I'm not targeting anything. I'm making a simple statement. An open source license, at least I've never seen an open source license, that mandates compatibility because the two concepts are incompatible with each other. It's a simple statement of fact. It's not a targeting of open source licenses. So I don't know what else to say. It is.
But the point is, why is that a sufficient reason to exclude the licensing of the technology? I mean, the compatibility should be a separate issue from...
What is excluding the licensing of the technology? I don't know what you mean.
Access to the technology, implementation of the specification, branding
as
compatible, separate. That's the point I'm making.
You're suggesting that branding and compatibility is or ought to be separate from licensing of the actual technology. Is that what you're saying?
Right, including access to the technology.
Got it. So you would prefer that access be freely granted rather than be granted with compatibility requirements?
Correct.
Right, as it is exactly what the second bullet here says, or is intended to say, that many people believe that it is already appropriate and many people believe it would be appropriate if you had free access to the technology and were able to create an incompatible implementation, and if, as you say, we were to separate the notion of branding and compatibility. But yes, I agree that is an approach that we should explore. So, thanks. Okay. I'd like to hear really from non-EC members. We're doing this for you guys. Hopefully you found the transmission of information useful, but I really would like this to be more of a two-way process. I know you're not shy.
Hello, Richard here again. I was just wondering, when having a think through all the issues that you raised with regard to JSR 358, that it seems like there's a significant amount of work there. Now, obviously, the goal, the overall reform has been split up into multiple JSRs already, but do you anticipate at all that there will be a timeline for this JSR, or whether you'll perhaps have to split this work up again in order to get a meaningful chunk of progress in place within a reasonable time frame?
Good question. We haven't explicitly discussed that. The issue or a concern is that changing the JSBA is a big deal, because not just that it's a lot of work to do, but actually implementing it and getting everybody to sign it is a big deal. So it's not something that you want to do often. So if we were to split this, I would be reluctant to split it in such a way that would require two revisions of the JSBA. If we could split it and find additional process document changes that we could implement separately from the JSBA, then that would be one option, to do yet another revision of the process document first and then follow that up, or perhaps in parallel, but the JSBA work would extend on a longer timeline, and rev the JSBA later. But I'm not sure how practical that is, because they're kind of intertwined, and we already found with 348 that there's a limit to the extent you can change the process document without bumping into the need to make corresponding changes to the JSBA. So good question. I mean, if it should turn out, if it should look like it's going to be a 3 or a 4 year effort, then I think we should seriously consider that. The main concern is the proliferation of multiple versions of the JSBA applying to different JSRs can get complicated, and requiring individuals or corporations to sign a new version of the JSBA shortly after they signed a previous version is potentially a problem. But it's a good question and a good suggestion. We'll bear it in mind.
Just a comment on that. This is Scott.
Yes.
Jameson. I guess, first of all, based on previous attempts to revise the JSPA, it wouldn't surprise me at all if this is a multi-year process. You know, I won't say 3 or 4, but it's certainly not a few months here. The other point is, we actually kind of already tried to do the triage as what sort of changes can be affected without touching the JSPA. And I'm not sure how much more of that is doable again. I think a lot of the reason the list is as it is today is because it all does touch the JSPA. So I would, you know, one, I think this is going to be a lot of work. It's going to be time consuming, and I'm not sure there's anything that could be splintered off, because I think we've done that.
Right. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. Any and all subjects are interesting. Welcome. As I'd said, I'm particularly interested in hearing whether you find the format of this meeting useful. We will be recording it. It is being recorded, I should say, and we will post the recording on jcp.org. But if there are other things that we can do to keep you guys informed and engaged, you know, let us know.
Hello, Anna. Yeah? Hello, sorry, I was just going to comment on your mention of recording the meeting. It sounds like a very good idea. I appreciate that a lot of meetings get recorded, but I'm not convinced that that many people go to jcp.org to listen to the meetings. It would be, I think, a really good idea if there was a more public push for other people to listen to the meetings and be more aware of what was going on, both through, for example, JUG leaders, but also perhaps on the corporate side of things. Do you have any plans for publicizing the recording of the meeting?
We'll use the usual channels, which is basically, I do understand, I'm a very strong believer, when people say, oh, something is on jcp.org, that's enough. I say, no, you know, don't expect people to come looking for stuff. You have to inform them. So we do have a Twitter feed. We do have a blog. We do use the two public mailing lists, the Java Champions and the JUG lists. And with help from Bruno and your buddies at LJC, we kind of try to use informal user group channels also. But I guess those are the primary ones. But yes, I will, once we get the recording up, which will be sometime next week because our web engineer is on vacation this week, I will let people know through the usual channels. I'm wondering whether we've got just a few minutes left. As I said, we have a public mailing list. It has very few subscribers and gets very little traffic. I'm wondering whether that might be helpful or useful as a kind of a synchronous communication channel, or whether there are other means. We have a Facebook page also, by the way, although I don't Facebook myself. Whether there are other kind of social media mechanisms that we could or should be using to encourage more of a two-way dialogue with you guys, or maybe you don't really care too much about two-way and maybe you think one-way is enough, that if we keep pushing the materials to you and give you the opportunity to ask a question or provide feedback, maybe that's all you want. I mean, you have to let me know, I guess. But I'm not hearing a lot of feedback at this meeting, which I find kind of interesting. I know we have several, I haven't counted, but certainly several visitors with us. Well, not hearing anything else, I'm going to give you one last chance to speak.
Patrick.
Yes.
Patrick, just a comment on the feedback on the meeting. I think that it takes some time for people to start participating.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, people need to hear a little bit before they can say anything.
Yep.
So, you know, I think the meetings are important. I'm not very convinced that just once a year we'll get people with the courage and the understanding to actually participate more. But if at least we have the meeting discussions more frequently, then it definitely will help.
Okay, good point. We'd started with two meetings a year. I mean, I guess in theory we could do more. I'm reluctant to kind of ask the EC members themselves to give up even more time. So I guess the only way we could do it would be we could go from two to three, perhaps, and you know, force us to do what we could do it in the same manner, making the second hour of our regularly scheduled meeting public. So we'll have some discussions within the EC, I think. Discuss at the next meeting, you know, get people's feelings on how whether we want to make any changes to this process. We could certainly do so if we wish. I think
just a quick question. The EC meeting on Java 1, will that also be publicly available to anybody who's at Java 1? Which?
It's publicly available to anyone, even if they're not at Java 1. You don't need a Java 1 pass to attend that meeting. You can walk in
office. Oh, and will they be slightly more closer together? Because I remember last year it was somewhere completely different, and then there was another parallel meeting that was JCP related. Do you know anything about whether this will be a little more accessible this time, or have the organizers not yet disclosed that?
We're still trying to figure out where to have it. I think we're going to have it close to the tent area. It's not Mason Street this time. It's somewhere else. But Heather's still working on that. It's going to be difficult because everything is kind of crammed. There's a lot of stuff crammed into that Sunday afternoon. So, you know, it's a perennial problem with Java 1. Trying to schedule things that don't conflict with other stuff is almost impossible. But we'll do our best.
Okay. Yeah, because I realized last year, I guess a lot of people probably didn't even realize it was there or it was too far for them to get. So I guess that would also increase participation on site if it was closer to the other stuff.
Far from what? It was like 2 minutes walk from the tent. But, you know, when you have a conference that's spread across three hotels, there's really not a lot to be done.
Some of the buffs were in Moscone last year.
Okay, three hotels and the Moscone. There's nothing I can do about that, then. You know, we're going to pick the most central location we can. We'll do our best, okay? All right, we're out of time here. Can I ask just one more time, the non-EC members who are present, just drop me or Bruno or Martin a note by email, just giving your name and your affiliation. I'm just curious to know how many people attended and, you know, where they came from. Okay, with that, let me give one last chance for anybody to speak up, give any quick comments or whatever, and then we'll wrap this up. Okay, not hearing any last comments. Thank you all for attending. I will turn off star 5, I think. Heather, or star 2?
Star 2. Thank you.